Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm your host, Elsherie Gladden. I'm a USA Today bestselling author with over 30 published novels, and I'm also a ninth grade English teacher, winding down the year, almost. On this week's episode, I have a really fun book. It's been a nice change. I've read some more really serious stuff lately. So this was really great to read something that was just a little bit more fun to read, which there's also some dark stuff in here too. But we're going to be talking with Daniel Burke today about his novel, Red Screen. Daniel, go ahead and introduce yourself first.
Hi, I'm Daniel Burke. I am a relatively new author. I have been traditionally published a couple times and self-published. I'm actually retired from the IT industry. And I guess other than being an author, my full-time job is just being a grandfather.
That's wonderful. Tell me a little bit. This book is through Artemisia Publishing's imprint. And this is, you said you've kind of done a blend of both traditional publishing and independent publishing. And we're going to dig into that a little bit more because I'm always interested in hearing about people's writing and publishing journeys. But before I go off on that sidetrack, tell everyone a little bit about Red Screen and just the basic concept of it so they know what we're talking about.
Sure. Well, Red Screen, when I came up with the idea of Red Screen, I kind of wanted to do something that was a little bit like Silence of the Lambs and Ready Player One kind of merged together. I write thrillers, and I really wanted to do a serial killer type thriller with some police procedural and some serious police FBI information in there, and you know, procedures and structure, characters. And I was always intrigued by the profilers and what they did. And I thought the whole journey of tracking a serial killer down was interesting, and a reader would find interesting. And then I said, well, let's flip it a little bit. How could we put that serial killer almost into a fantasy setting? How could we bring sword and sorcery into a serial killer thriller? And the way I decided to do that was to make the serial killer hunt his victims in a metaverse fantasy game, which of course is sword and sorcery. And that allows me to bring in my main protagonist, Shay Britton, who plays a character in this sword and sorcery VR game. And now she is hunting the killer in the game, who has a personality in the game, while he's killing in the real. And of course, you can see where this comes together, where we have Shay eventually being stalked by the real serial killer.
And I love this concept. I think most people who look at this will immediately pick up on the Ready Player One kind of concept, but you do a lot of different, I guess, concepts within that concept. So we have, you know, the virtual reality, the simulation. You get a little bit into the world of being too much in the game and being invested in the system to the point of some of the victims, it's kind of affecting their personal lives in reality. And you show kind of the different sides of how someone like your protagonist, Shay, interacts with the game and uses it as almost kind of a side business versus different aspects of some people use it more just for like sports and recreation in different games within there. So you get this really interesting exploration of how entertainment can interact with the real life and where some of those complications arise. So even just on that level, I thought it was a really interesting study of just how technology and using technology as entertainment affects our everyday life. And you said you have a background in IT.
I do.
We're not quite to the level that you describe in your book, but we definitely still have that difficult to balance real life versus online life already? And is that something you kind of dealt with or found some inspiration in when developing this concept?
Yeah. When I write my novels, I try at some level to find something in the story that talks about a real life problem. And though this problem isn't necessarily the most significant problem you'll encounter socially, this game addiction, it does happen. There's a series of very popular online games today, World of Warcraft, other games that where people spend an enormous amount of time in those games, and they do become their characters in a such a way in their game, and they do become addicted to their games. And where I'm going with this is my son certainly was a bit of a game addict when he was younger. And I always worried now that my grandkids play these games and they play the virtual reality games, you know, they have the Quest headsets and they play those games. I worry about where does that lead? Could it lead to, as the games and the universe itself become so immersive, could it lead to a place where that addiction becomes a real social problem, a real social problem? We are already all addicted to our smartphones and spend an enormous amount of time checking our social media accounts and checking things. Well, what happens when everything's so immersive and you live in a virtual space where, as Shay puts it, what happens when if all the senses can be virtual? Would you ever leave? So, I think that that's worth exploring in a story. I tried not to get too heavy into it because I was trying to entertain, but there's a little undercurrent of, boy, we better watch out because if it gets too immersive, what will it do to people?
And I will say that you did balance that well, that it was something that provoked some thoughts for me as I was reading, but it didn't take over the whole story, which was nice. But it did make me think about, I teach ninth grade, and
right.
The first semester, we did a lot with our online platforms and trying to get them to learn that. And I struggled so much with getting them to stay focused and turn in their work and not get sidetracked. And so many of them were just incapable of having a computer open without immediately jumping to Fortnite.
Right, right.
And it was really affecting their grades and they weren't turning stuff in. And so this semester, we do over 90% of their work is on paper now because I could not keep them off games. Even with our monitoring software and supposedly being able to lock them out of certain things, which they find ways around in about 2 seconds. And so it's interesting, even seeing them at that age, they're struggling to function in a school setting because they want to just sit and play games so much. I thought about that at several times reading this where I'm just like, yeah, oh my goodness. Like, I couldn't imagine if these kids had something as immersive as even what's described in the book. I don't know how you'd ever get them out of it.
Well, we're not far from it. We really are not far from it. That book, you know, it's a speculative fiction. So, I don't like to call it science fiction because to me, it's not 100 years from now. It's 5 or 10 years from now. I mean, the Apple Vision, we'll see if that'll ever be a market success. But certainly Meta and its Quest products are successful in many ways. And like I said, my own grandchildren, they spend time in these virtual worlds with their headsets on. And we're not far from the immersive world of might and magic that Shay lives in. Well, Shay plays in.
Absolutely. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that continues to develop and what social issues we see and how as a society we figure out ways to deal with that if we do. Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Right.
Now, you had some other really fascinating, thought-provoking themes in this book as well, and I wanted to touch on the family dynamics without giving too much away because I don't want to give any spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
But you have several relationships within the book. Mm-hmm. Where we see kind of those dynamics between chosen family versus the families we're born into, and just some of the effects of how people are treated, how that impacts self-perception, and then that kind of tumbles and follows through to the actions that we choose.
Right.
As much as you can, like I said, I don't want to give spoilers away, because that could easily happen in this topic.
Yeah.
But tell me about kind of developing those themes and just kind of exploring those dynamics within relationships and how they affect people and how we turn out as human beings.
Well, my goal of exploring those things, and I explore them with a few characters, as you mentioned, is I think people find connections if the characters actually are struggling or have a background that suggests why they behave the way they do, and that a background is interesting in a way that it draws the reader in. And also, I wanted to make sure that in my villain, for example, I wanted to give more of a reason why the villain's a villain, right? So I wanted to kind of explain kind of some dysfunctional aspects of their life and their upbringing and how that kind of might have twisted them. I wanted to give the reader some background as to why Shay is how she is and how she's trying to find her way in the world, coming from her background. I wanted to have Shay also deal with just being someone who's, you know, Southeast Asian and British, which I thought would be interesting for the audience. And and of course I have the dynamic with Parker, the FBI agent, where I wanted some loss factored in and how people deal with grief and loss and how that affects them. And of course I have the other character, which I'm not gonna expose too much on that character, where we have a loss issue there too.
And those are things that are all very relatable situations that so many people have dealt with in their personal lives. And Everybody deals with it a little bit differently, but it always kind of has its impact, regardless of The exact situation, the details. And I think you highlighted that really well, of just what people go through leaves its mark, and The people around you rarely know everything that you're facing. And how those things are impacting a person. I think as a society, we tend to be very judgmental about people and come to those quick judgments very quickly. And you kind of bring that in with some of the comments being made about certain characters and seeing that difference between being on the inside of a person's life experience and observing from the outside and how different those two perspectives are.
I'm so glad you picked that up, because the metaphor with Darshana and Fallon, that is the metaphor, right? That Darshana doesn't know what Fallon's going through, what he's walking through. And that plays out when you learn more about the real person behind Fallon. So, exactly.
Well, and there's a lot to go over in this, so I'm going to jump around just a little bit to try to fit everything in I wanted to talk to. I usually run out of time and can never actually accomplish that. Uh-huh. But with this, like you said, it's a mixture of technology and the criminal side of things and that investigative element. So you're kind of blending genres here.
Yep.
And you've really got to get all the details worked out on both sides of that story for it to work, which I think you did a really nice job of. So I kind of wanted to tackle them individually. As far as the technology side of it, like you said, you've got some background in technology. You're seeing your family members, your grandchildren interact with it. How did you develop your specific rules for the world that Shay lives in and also really that Darshana lives in the metaverse and reality? Because you really kind of had to develop both sides of that. And what are the rules? How does it work? How does it fit into society?
Sure. Well, my first goal or challenge, I would be a better word to put it, of writing it, is I didn't want it to be too wonky. And I didn't want a reader to have to be a gamer or a technologist to enjoy the book, right? I didn't want to fill it with all kinds of jargon and make a person have to, you know, learn how to play a game to read the book. So when I put Darshana, Shay, when I put Darshana in her world, I decided instead of trying to put her into a computer game, I wanted to have the computer game and all the things that come with that to be kind of an incidental thing. When I put her in her world, she's in her world. And I'm not ashamed to say I tried to model that a little bit off J.R.R. Tolkien's worlds, right? I wanted to feel very hobbitish when she's walking through the worlds and making her journeys, making her tracks, along with the characters that are all part along with her. And the rules, I just relied on some very fundamental gaming, role-playing gaming rules that have been around for forever, right? For 40, 50, almost 60 years now, but we'll go with 40 years. And I hit on a little bit, I wrote a little bit of an acknowledgement in the beginning of the book about one of the very first, if not the first, commercial multi-user online games, which was a game called British Legends. It was all text-based, but a lot of the, you know, a lot of the rules about wizards and, you know, the finger of death I talk about and things of that nature, all rooted into that very simple game that's 40 plus years old. That was what I would say the very first. And a lot of the descriptions about the settings that I put Che in, those descriptions are an homage, if you will, to some of the descriptions of that early game.
I think that's really drawing from things that people are familiar with, not reinventing the entire wheel, which I think really let you just get into the story and not have to spend, you know, the first five chapters world building the entire thing, can be fun as a writer, but sometimes as the reader, that gets a little bit hard to get through.
Right.
And on the other side, with the criminal investigation, it's always been interesting to me kind of the levels that a writer can take that to, where we've kind of got characters who get dumped into a mystery and they kind of flounder their way through it versus someone familiar with investigation all the way up to like hard-boiled police procedurals where the focus is on the process and all the little bitty details. And you're kind of in the middle there. Like, you don't get super technical. We're not, you know, getting test results on every little piece of evidence, which can also kind of bog down a reader at times. But tell me where you kind of found that happy medium and how your research into that world kind of helped guide you on how much or how little to delve into the investigative process.
Well, sure. My FBI profiler, Dr. Parker Reed, is based a lot off of Tom Harris's John Crawford, who is also based off a real character, John Douglas, who is credited with starting a lot of the behavioral science work within the FBI. And I wanted to give Parker and the things he did just enough for similitude, just enough realness to make the reader feel like this really could happen. There's nothing off the wall here. There's nothing that they're doing that's, you know, this feels like this is how you would run an investigation. So I just wanted to give enough coloring, if you will, to what he was doing to make it feel that way. And I didn't want to tip it too far. I just wanted it to be interesting enough about some of the intricacies about behavioral science and some of the intricacies about crime scene investigation. A lot of this stuff is so much into our culture now and our entertainment culture. Everybody knows about behavioral science. Everybody's seen a CSI episode here or there. Everybody kind of knows about these things. So I just wanted to just reach in and touch some of that and pull it in to make Parker feel real. And then I gave Parker his disability because I wanted him to be a little vulnerable, right? I wanted him to be, I didn't want him to be a Superman, right? I wanted him to be an intellectual, but have challenges of his own. And I wanted him to be much like a Greg House from the old House TV series. I wanted him to be very smart and a little bit of a wisecracker and, maybe a little bit difficult to his staff and others, but I wanted him to be, vulnerable in a way.
I can definitely see that in his character. I watched a lot of House when that was popular and on TV. Yeah. He was a fascinating character.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings back around kind of those relationships, because even though you definitely get into the process and we can follow the investigation as the reader and it makes sense, but a lot of the police side of it with the FBI agents and interacting a little bit with some of the other agencies, you're really getting a lot of the relationship between them and how it affects the people working in these settings as well. Because I think that's something we don't always consider when we're thinking about this as entertainment. And, you know, we're watching, lots of people have fascination with serial killers and, you know, watching those mysteries unfold. But with this, you really get to see a little bit more the toll that it takes on people who are in this field, who are dealing with these type of really just gruesome, awful situations on a day-to-day basis, and kind of seeing that humanity in the people who are going after these really scary, really dangerous people.
Well, right. Well, my character, Jaden Bro, I wanted to make him a bit of a rookie. And I wanted him to make him, he was my agent Starling from, you know, bringing my, Silence of the Lambs. I wanted a character who I could show some of that, you know, show some of that, some of the effect of the horrors of a crime scene on. And as far as the relationships with the various police organizations, I didn't want to, a lot of times as writers, we feel like we have to create a conflict between the feds and the police and have them, you know, arguing over jurisdiction and things like that. And the more I looked into this and the more I researched it and the more I read about, the way this really works, it's rarely like that. It's more often than not the locals will call in a consultation and ask for the FBI to help. And that's what I tried to do with this. I wanted to create interesting characters on the Vegas police side. I wanted to give them kind of memorable attributes, even though they don't, you know, they're rounded and they are the characters that evolve throughout the story, but they don't have big roles. I wanted to see the interplay between the FBI and them, and I didn't want it to be overly contentious, right? Even though I do, I guess at times make, you know, my Detective Higgs a little bit ornery, but I wanted them to have kind of a working relationship, but have it just enough tension in it to make it interesting. And then I wanted to use, like I said before, I wanted to use Jaden as my character that you had to see where the impacts of the crime scenes and the investigations, and then build the relationship with Shay so that you saw the impacts on him.
And I think it's a great process to think through and plan within your story, because I thought it really added a lot of depth both to the characters and the story overall, to have those relationships there and see the interactions and then see it change throughout the course of the story as well. That's something that sometimes with, I think, thriller type of stories, you get really focused on, as the reader, on, you know, the events that are happening and the clues and what's next and can you figure it out? And you get really absorbed in the mystery side of it. And you don't always think as the reader, like, oh, well, these characters are really developing throughout the story, or thank goodness, you know, they've got their goals and they're systematically approaching their goal throughout the story. You don't think about that always as a reader. But as a writer, you do have to think about those things, and you want to build your characters along with the story so it does feel real. And I wanted to ask you, what's your approach with that? Do your characters kind of develop organically with your story as you write, or do you plan a lot of that ahead of time and maybe sketch out your character arcs in some way?
A little bit of both. When I start on a story, I have four or five scenes in mind, right? Like I might build an entire story around one scene that I've carried around forever. Like, for example, in this particular book, has gone through several title changes and in different incarnations. When I first came up with the idea of the story, it was the Cyber Park Murders, and it was, you know, many years ago. But there's one scene in this book, and it's the scene where Shay is kind of stuck in her rig, and I won't go any farther than that, but she's dealing with the killer and she's stuck in her rig. And that scene was in my mind the whole time. And so from there, I evolved out from that scene and then started building the characters around getting to that scene. And so my process really is that I have I use a OneNote application where I build tables of characters, an outline, a chapter map, and then I'll build the bios and the backstories for my characters, and I'll keep working on those as I'm writing. And then sometimes I might find something about a character I learn while I'm writing, tweak his backstory, and then I have to go back and adjust some chapters because the characters become more real to me as I'm writing. And at some point in time, I'm like, well, that isn't the way this character would behave. I have to go back and fix that. And because they become more real as I flesh out the story. And so I got a mix of, you know, sketching everything out in front, coming up with all their backstories up front, and then writing the story. Mine is more of a mix. I start with a scene or two, build characters around to fill that scene, you know, get them all in kind of a bare bones structure, and then start building their backstories and their bios as I start writing more scenes. And then at some point in time, I get a nice set of character bios and backstories, and maybe I have to retouch up some scenes to make sure they align.
That's a fascinating process. I really like that. It's one of my favorite parts of getting to talk to different writers is seeing how different everybody approaches the same act of writing a novel. Nobody ever has the exact same answer, which is a lot of fun to see. And I did notice we're already starting to get short on time, which happens so fast every time. But I did want to ask you, what are you working on now, and what can readers keep an eye out for in the future?
Oh, well, thank you for asking. My current project is called The Hunchback of Las Vegas. It's another thriller, and in this particular thriller, it's much more of a private detective oriented thriller. I'm a huge Robert Cray fan, huge Elvis Cole, Joe Pike fan, and I guess this will be more of a feel of that, where I'm trying to cultivate a set of characters that will live through a whole series, and this would be the first in the series. So it's The Hunchback of Las Vegas, takes place in Las Vegas, and it's a private investigator thriller, and it's by far the hardest novel I think I've ever written. I think Red Screen, I carried it around in my head for many, many, many years, but I wrote it, I think, in 6 or 7 months. Hunchback, I've been working on for an entire year. It's been quite a journey.
Well, that sounds interesting, and a great choice in mentors to look at that genre and work from. Is that one that you've said you've kind of gone the route of traditional publishing, and you've also done some independent publishing as well? Mm-hmm. What kind of track are you thinking for the future, or are you still continuing to do a little bit of both?
Well, like everybody, right? My goal is to try to break into the top three or top four, whatever number of left publishing houses there are. Obviously, that's the major leagues. That's where I'd like to end up. But it's very nice to be part of the Artemisa family. I also work with another traditional publisher as well. But my dream, as any novel writer's dream, is to reach the mass market, where you walk on an airplane. I just got off an airplane. You just walk on an airplane and walk down the aisle, and you see someone holding your book, right? That's the dream, right? The dream is to have that kind of mass market distribution and accessibility, and you know, that's my goal as an author. And it's not so much as wanting to be a commercial success. You know, it's not a money thing, right? Though certainly you wouldn't say no to that, but it is to be read, right? To be read and to know people are reading and get that feedback and see that. That's really my, my dream or my aspiration, I guess.
It's an exciting process, well, also for a lot of people, a terrifying prospect as well. But I wish you the best in that. And I definitely really enjoyed this, even though I said at the beginning, it was a fun read. Yes, it has some dark elements to it, but I finished it quickly. I really enjoyed just having kind of this adventure to follow your characters on. So I hope people take a minute to check it out. And Daniel, where can people find you and find the book online?
Certainly the book's on Amazon. It's pretty much available any place. Ebooks or even print books are sold. And for me, you could always reach me at danielburkewrites.com. Danielburkewrites.com is my website. And Daniel Burke Writes is my Facebook ID as well.
All right. Well, awesome. Well, just to remind our readers, the book is called Red Screen, and that's by Daniel Burke. And I want to thank you for taking the time to chat with me today and tell us a little bit more about your book and your plans for the future. I'd love to have you back and talk about your next one.
Thank you so much.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.